What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Rabbi Harold Kushner, author of When Bad Things Happen to Good People and How You Know Your Life Makes a Difference. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's Super Bowl Sunday, a full-on national holiday here in America, and we would be remiss on Too Jewish if we missed the chance to explore the Jewish meaning behind this sacred and solemn day. After all, we Americans have very few actual holidays compared to the rich tapestry of the Jewish festival calendar, but that doesn't mean that Jewish Americans can't enjoy this overblown Super Bowl media day with full knowledge of its true Judaic implications. At least 8 Jewish football players have appeared in Super Bowls, including a past guest of Too Jewish, Alan Weingrad, now a Chabadnik, and multi-Super Bowl winners like lineman Harris Barton and tight end Randy the Rabbi Grossman. And, of course, coach Marv Levy led the Buffalo Bills to 4 straight Super Bowl appearances, none of which he won, sadly. Something Jewish about that. We have also had a number of Jewish owners of one or both of the teams in the Super Bowls. Robert Kraft of the Patriots has been there 5 times, sometimes pitted against other Jewish owners like Jeffrey Lurie and the Tisch family. And the Raiders' late owner Al Davis also made it 5 times, winning 3. But this year, the larger Jewish representation at the Super Bowl comes from the halftime show. And the greatest Jewish controversy comes from a commercial. The stars of the overblown showbiz halftime spectacle that divides the 30 minutes of actual football time are Bruno Mars, whose dad is Jewish on his Brooklyn-born side, and the rock group the Red Hot Chili Peppers, who boast a Jewish guitarist in Josh Klinghoffer. He's a distant relative of PLO terrorism victim Leon Klinghoffer, by the way, and 2 Jewish co-founders, the late Israeli-American guitarist Hillel Slovak and drummer Jack Irons, who now drums for the mostly Jewish rock group the Wallflowers, led by Jacob Dylan, Bob's son. But anyway, what has generated most of the Super Bowl press has been something quite different. You know, there are times when reality is much, much stranger than fiction, and this week marked one of those times. The great issue surrounding the Super Bowl apparently relates to sultry Jewish actress Scarlett Johansson, homemade soda, and a factory in the Israeli city of Maale Adumim. Oh, and a 30-second ad in the whole 4 or 5 hour bloated extravaganza that the Super Bowl has become, that's the key to it all, believe it or not. The story goes like this. Israeli company SodaStream, which makes an increasingly popular product that creates carbonated soda at home without the need for cans or bottles, hired sexy Jewish superstar actress Scarlett Johansson to be its spokesperson. Johansson is also an international ambassador for the aid group Oxfam, which does good work in the developing world but is not positive about Israel. Immediately after Johansson was hired, the anti-Israel groups became incensed because one of SodaStream's factories is located in Maale Adumim, a large town of 40,000 people about 10 minutes east of Jerusalem, 4 miles to be exact, that's located just beyond the Green Line in what is technically the West Bank. I have been in Maale Adumim, and I can tell you that in any final status negotiations with the Palestinians, there is zero, and I mean zero, chance that it will be given to any new Palestinian state if that state is ever created. There will be a land swap, and Maale Adumim will continue to be a commuter neighborhood of Jerusalem. In the interests of full disclosure, I can also tell you that I was once stoned by an Arab youth driving through a neighborhood close to Maale Adumim. He threw a rock through the window of my car, showering me with broken glass as I drove. Nowadays, there are bypass roads that avoid the Arab villages, and in any version of Palestine that might ultimately come to exist, that is exactly what will separate the Arab and Jewish areas and allow both countries to live in basic peace without such incidents. Anyway, I can also tell you that located in Maale Adumim is a large industrial park housing some 200 businesses, among them a Soda Stream factory that employs about 1,300 people manufacturing their product, including over 500 Palestinian employees who make a better salary working there than they could get working for any Palestinian company. This is one of 13 Soda Stream factories located around the world, including some in China and other larger ones in Israel. After all the bad press came pouring out from the usual suspects, the international community, the Palestinians, Arabs, and so on, the president of SodaStream said, "We will not throw our employees under the bus to promote anyone's political agenda. I just can't see how it would help the cause of the Palestinians if we fired them." Scarlett Johansson, the eye candy of the storm, addressed the international criticism by saying that I stand behind the SodaStream product and am proud of the work I have accomplished at Oxfam as an ambassador for over 8 years. While I never intended on being the face of any social or political movement, distinction, separation, or stance as part of my affiliation with SodaStream, given the amount of noise surrounding that decision, I'd like to clear the air. She said, "I remain a supporter of economic cooperation and social interaction between a democratic Israel and Palestine. As part of my efforts as an ambassador for Oxfam, I have witnessed firsthand that progress is made when communities join together and work alongside one another and feel proud of the outcome of that work in the quality of their product and work environment, in the pay they bring home to their families, and in the benefits they equally receive." So, what's all this insane amount of attention dedicated to? This commercial.
Like most actors, my real job is saving the world. Start with plain water, add bubbles, mix in the perfect flavor. Look, a soda that's better for you and all of us. Less sugar, less bottles. If only I could make this message go viral.
Whoa, you doing it, Scarlett. Yeah, you doing it. Changing the world. Sip at a time.
Sorry, Coke and Pepsi.
Oh yeah, she done it. SodaStream.
Talk about making a molehill into a mountain, or creating a tempest in a teapot, or a tsunami in a glass of soda. Basically, we need to let the soda spray, let the commercial run, and good for Scarlett Johansson in rising above all of this nonsense. And boy, has SodaStream gotten $1 billion worth of free publicity out of all of this, including some from us right here at Too Jewish. Not that I'm interested in becoming a celebrity endorser. I mean, you have to be a celebrity to do that anyway. But if I did, I think I would endorse SodaStream right now just because. Davka. Folk singer-songwriting legend Pete Seeger died last week. In his memory, and to play us in on this lovely winter morning here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, and where it is about 30 degrees warmer than it is in New Jersey today, where for some unknown reason they're playing the Super Bowl outside, here's Billboard's number 2 song of 1950, the highest ever for an Israeli tune, Tzena Tzena Tzena, as sung by the Weavers and Pete Seeger. It introduced a positive view of Israel to a whole generation of Americans. I'm not sure their Hebrew is so great, but still, it's a piece of history.
Tzena, 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 can't you hear the music playing in the city square? Tzena, 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 come where all our friends will find us with the dancers there. Tzena, tzena, join the celebration. There'll be people there from every nation. Dawn will find us laughing in the sunlight, dancing in the city square. Tzena, tzena, come and dance the hora, 1, 2, 3, 4. All the boys will envy me for tzena, tzena. When the band is playing, my heart say, tzena, tzena, tzena.
Friends, if you've been dancing to this song the last year, you'd like to know maybe that it came to us from the new land of Israel. We're singing now not only those new English words that we made up for that record with Gordon Jenkins, but also the original Hebrew words of this song that was written for lots of people to sing and dance together.
Tzena, 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 habanot urena chayalim, bamashabah. Alna, alna, alna.
alla 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 ich ja bin am ben khair yelish taba tena tena haben und tren khair hey ja limba mashaba alla 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 ich ja bin am ben khair yelish taba tena tena haben und tren khair hey ja limba mashaba alla alla alla
That was the Weavers and the late Pete Seeger singing Tsena 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 from way back in 1950. May Pete Seeger's memory continue to bring blessing. My friends, there are very few people who inspire us, educate us, and help us deal with the toughest moments in our lives. Rabbi Harold Kushner, the author of When Bad Things Happen to Good People and many other best-selling books, is one of them. He'll be speaking in public here for my own Temple Emmanuel next Sunday at an event. Call 327-4501 for tickets. And we will talk with him in just a few moments when we return on Too Jewish. Parents in Tucson have many choices on where to send their children to school. Consider the best. Consider Tucson Hebrew Academy. Now is the time to secure your spot for the upcoming school year. With a beautiful Foothills K-8 campus and award-winning academics, you owe it to your children to visit THA, Tucson Hebrew Academy, and see what they have to offer. Your child belongs at THA. THA delivers. Low student-teacher ratio supports successful, rigorous academics, and they don't stop there. With an emphasis on the arts, science, and music, THA students learn the Hebrew language and are taught Jewish values along with a rigorous academic curriculum. Your child deserves the best. Call 529-3888 to schedule your tour of THA. Financial aid is available. Don't wait. Space is limited. That's 529-3888 or visit www.thaaz.org. We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish art guests this morning. He's Harold Kushner, best known as the author of When Bad Things Happen to Good People, but a remarkable scholar, teacher, and contemporary philosopher. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. It's nice to be in touch with you. I have to tell you, back here in Boston where we live, it's 10 degrees out with 4 inches of snow on the ground. So our thoughts are very much in Tucson.
And have to be philosophically attuned to the challenges of life living in that. It's only going to be about 70 degrees here today, not to rub it in. Harold, you've written extensively about how to cope with all the different challenges in life, explore different aspects of Jewish thought in a contemporary way. How do we know when our lives really matter?
Oh, I think there are a lot of ways. It's not a matter of how often you get your name in the paper or what kind of Q rating you have. I think it's an inner feeling. You can think of times when you've done something that really helped people. Specific suggestions that I make when I try and advise people on this subject. One, what you can't do by yourself, join with other people to do. Find some organization that works for goodwill projects, whether it's a synagogue or church, whether it's a civic organization, a charitable fund. A lot of people working together can make amazing things happen. Another is what I like to think of as being the best actor in a supporting role. That is, you work behind the scenes to make a lot of important things happen. Very few of us will end up being the star of the story. A lot of us can end up being the person who makes a significant contribution behind the scenes. And then just the sense that during the day you do things which matter to others. You do things which make life more pleasant for other people. It could be utterly trivial things. A cheerful greeting. You never know what kind of difference that could make in a person's life. People will tell me that, you know, I was having a really bad day, and you came and you recognized me by name, you smiled at me, and you said, how are you doing? And that made me feel a lot better. And I said, not just because I'm a clergyman, it's because, you know, I try to be a thoughtful person, and people respond to that. You know, this can be an awfully lonely world if you're not lucky. And what redeems us from loneliness is just the message that there are people out there, either the people we share a home with or the people we share our office with or just people we run into who care about us and wish us well. And when you know you're one of those people, you're having a life that matters.
You know, there's a phrase, it's not what we have but what we give that makes a difference. Do you think that's true?
Oh, I think absolutely. And it's not only in terms of financial contributions, it's what you give of your time, which for a lot of people is in shorter supply than money. It's what you give of yourself, your thoughtfulness. I've got a funny habit. My wife was the first one to notice it. When I'm writing a book, I write early in the morning. I write from about 9 to 11, and after that, the brain just doesn't work anymore. And before I sit down to write, I will write a check to some charitable organization, stamp it, and put it out for collection. My wife asked me why I do that, and I said, it's just an extra piece of paper on my desk I want to get rid of. And she was right. She said, I don't think so. I think you're trying to put yourself in a mood for writing by thinking of yourself as a charitable person. I think she's absolutely right. I try to begin my day doing something charitable, and it colors the rest of my day.
A beautiful thought. We will talk much more with Rabbi Harold Kushner, who will be here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, on February 9th, speaking about how do you know your life really matters. We'll talk more when we come back on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Among my most pleasant, at least time-consuming duties, I have the honor of serving as president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, which celebrates the memories of Rabbi Samuel S. and A. Irma Kohan, my own grandparents. Once a year, the foundation gives a substantial cash award to an individual for outstanding service to Klal Yisrael, the totality of the Jewish people. This service can involve any one of four different fields: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. If you know of anyone who might qualify for the 2013 Kohan Award, just visit our website, www.kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N, and you'll find the nomination form to submit. And while you're there, you can also learn just who my own grandparents were and who participates in honoring their memory today. That's kohanaward.com, C-O-H-O-N-A-W-A-R-D. It's a good visit. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. We started talking last week about Freedom Smoke, the smokeless product, no tobacco, to get people off of cigarettes. What are the health advantages to using your product as opposed to smoking?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. We have a lot of physicians here in town, from neurologists to ophthalmologists, cardiologists, pulmonologists, sending patients to us because of damaging effects from emphysema, everything of the like that comes from smoking cancerous cigarettes.
And Freedom Smoke International provides all kinds of flavors, pleasurable experience, but not the same health risk.
That's right. You have the same experience as smoking. You have the hand-to-mouth, the mantra of the In-N-Out, as well as vapors compared to cigarette smoke. So there's no secondhand smoke either.
How can people find your product?
They can find us through freedomsmokeusa.com. Our toll-free number, which is here in Tucson, is 800-705-7013.
And then go into a store.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have 3 stores. We're opening a 4th in the next couple of months here in town.
We will talk more next week. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch, or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through the website or download us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. The Temple Emmanuel pilgrimage trip to Israel with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan of 2Jewish, is set for June 11th to June 23rd in the Holy Land in 2014. If you're interested in going on this fantastic journey to the wonderful land of Israel, seeing it from Tel Aviv to Haifa to Tzfat to Jerusalem to the Dead Sea to Masada, please email 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com or call 520-327-4501 for more information or to sign up. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
You know, when I lived in Jerusalem, I always felt if you stood in front of the Supersol on the corner, you could see Jews from 150 different countries in a couple of hours, because everybody in Israel, it seems like, has immigrated from somewhere, some of them from countries that don't even exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all a nation of new immigrants, but many, many first, second generation immigrants. That means Israeli society has to have lots of differences, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And actually, it's funny, and I guess one time we will speak about how each of these Jews brought their heritage and holidays, but it's for one time.
Okay.
But on one hand, each of us, I can say each of us, really proud on our heritage or own heritage. My parents from Morocco, so I think the Moroccan food, heritage, history, stories,
music
are the best.
Of course.
But if you ask another one from Iran or Libya or from, they will say they're the best food, music. And, but you know, on a happy or sad time or whenever you will need a help in Israel, so it doesn't matter where you came from or where your parents came from, we'll be there one for all and all for one.
That's right.
So I think this is the most beautiful Israeli thing that,
you know,
I like.
It's fantastic. I have to tell a quick story. I remember being in Israel, riding in a car with a friend, an Israeli friend, and he was saying, oh, we all know, you know, I'm a German Jew and we're the best, and the Polish Jews are pretty good, but they're below us, and the Romanians and the Hungarians are a little below them. And he went through this whole list. And then we got stuck in traffic, and somebody called out from the car next to him, clearly a Mizrahi, I don't know, maybe he was from Morocco, Yemen, who knows, somewhere. And he said, hey, have you got a cigarette? And the guy said, oh, sure. And then they traded cigarettes and lights, and I'm not saying cigarettes are good, but, you know, it was clear that really, it didn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
If his father was born in Berlin, and this mm-hmm. guy's father was born in Tunisia, it made no difference.
Yeah.
So I think part of it is this acculturation, but it seems like in Israel also people keep not only the pride of their heritage, but some of the elements of the heritage much more tightly than we manage to in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you made my case.
Well, I have to say, it certainly makes for a terrific place to eat and listen to music.
Yeah, because you have all kind of food and music.
From everywhere where Jews used to live and now they live in Israel. Yeah,
you name it.
Thanks, Oshrat.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk next week. When we come back on 2Jewish, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. Attention, Arizona income taxpayers. You can help send children to our community's Jewish schools without it costing you a dime. Direct your tax dollars to JETCO, J-E-T-C-O, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. Here's how. The state of Arizona allows its taxpayers to get a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to recognized school tuition organizations, who then provide scholarships for kids from kindergarten through 12th grade to attend qualified private schools. JETCO helps provide a quality Jewish education to children in need at Congregation Anshe Israel Kindergarten, Tucson Jewish Community Center Kindergarten, Temple Emmanuel Kindergarten, and the Tucson Hebrew Academy. If you pay Arizona state income tax and make your contribution to JETCO, you'll get a 100% tax credit on your Arizona state income tax return. Tax credit's not a deduction. Your taxes are reduced by the amount you give. Join over 750 supporters last year who donated money to JETCO and got it all back in the form of reduced or refunded state income taxes. There's an additional tax credit now, the switcher credit, which increases the maximum donation you can make to JETCO to $1,031 for single filers, $2,062 for married couples filing jointly. When we are fighting every day for the continuity of the Jewish people, we should all take advantage of this great opportunity. JETCO is one way to help foster a Jewish identity for our community's children. Contributions to JETCO have helped hundreds of children receive the financial aid they need to receive a good Jewish education. To direct your tax dollars to Jewish education today, call 520-647-8442, again 647-8442, or visit JETCO on the web at www.jetco.org. Help give the gift of education.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, we began speaking about the blood libel last week, the horrible canard that Jews needed blood to make matzah, and this town in France, in the Moselle region, which has now reversed a long-ago conviction and execution of a Jew named Levi in 1670 as part of reaching out to the Jewish community. Blood libel still exists some places. Let's explore that a little bit. And what's going on that caused them to decide to take this away after 350 years?
Right. So there are sort of two different questions. One is, having last week defined the blood libel, we should look a little bit about how it spread and what its history is, and then maybe consider or speculate as to why in this small town in France they suddenly decided to reverse a conviction that had stood for 350 years and to acknowledge a historic wrong and pardon this guy and make an effort to reconcile with Jews in France who might wish to resettle there or at least visit there or whatever. So, I mean, the first question is, how did this spread? And I think that as Jews moved into new areas throughout their history. Basically they started in the Roman world and all the Mediterranean ports. And the map of world Jewry looked a lot like a map of the Roman Empire, with the addition, and the important addition, of the old communities from the destruction of the First Temple that were located in what is today Iran and Iraq, and sort of Babel.
And Babylonia.
Those countries were never Roman,
right?
But they have Jewish communities which predate both the Roman and the Greek empires. And interestingly, those countries never propagated the blood libel, and basically were not anti-Semitic in any significant way until after the State of Israel was born, or at least the existence of the State of Israel became a very real possibility in the 1930s and 40s.
By the way, it doesn't mean that Jews were equal in those societies, but they didn't have the sort of pervasive anti-Semitism that was so common in the West.
No, and there was no like religiously based anti-Semitism, and there was no real belief in the blood libel. But certainly a belief in the blood libel spread as far as Soviet Central Asia, because I know somebody locally very well who is from Bukhara on the Silk Road in Uzbekistan.
Really central Asia there.
Right, a predominantly Muslim country, but colonized by Christian Russians. And her mother had many Russian friends who were Christians. And that town had a communal oven for baking Passover matzah. And her mother used to invite her non-Jewish Russian friends to watch the process of baking matzah. And these women, halfway through the 20th century, I mean, the second half of the 1900s, would say, oh, no, we can't go because we don't want to see the blood of Christian children being used to bake matzah. And for them, this was an established fact that a key ingredient to matzah was the blood of Christian children. And although they were friends, they didn't want to watch the process and have it kind of verified and thrown in their faces. So, you know, this is a long enduring and very widespread, at least geographically, canard, is to use the word you used before,
right,
about the Jewish people. And it has been used to justify anti-Semitism through much of the Christian world.
Yeah, for like 1,000 years now. Virulent and horrible. And yet, maybe some things are changing. We'll talk about that next week.
Right. I look forward to it.
Thanks, Tom. It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Dave, Abe, and Moshe are waiting in line to get into heaven. When Dave gets to the front of the line, the angel Gabriel says to him, "Heaven is nearly full today. I could only admit those who've had horrible deaths. So, what's your story?" "Well," says Dave, "I suspected my wife was cheating on me, so I came home early to try to catch her red-handed. I knew something was wrong as soon as I came into the apartment, but I couldn't find out where the guy was hiding. When I went out on the balcony, there was this man hanging onto my railing. I was furious and started kicking him, but he held on. So I got a hammer and beat on his fingers. He couldn't take that, and he had to let go. He fell 20 stories, but somehow landed in some thick bushes and only stunned himself. So I ran into my kitchen, and in a feat of superhuman strength, I grabbed the refrigerator and threw it over the balcony. My aim was perfect. It landed right on top of him, killing him instantly. Unfortunately, all the raw anger got to me. I was so remorseful, I jumped off the balcony, and I'm here." "That sounds pretty bad," says the angel Gabriel, and he lets Dave in. Then the angel turns to Abe and says, "You know, heaven's full. Tell me your story. It must be terrible." "Well, it's been a very weird day for me," says Abe. I live on the 21st floor of an apartment building. Every morning I do exercises on my balcony. Unfortunately, this morning I slipped on the wet floor and fell over the edge. Luckily, I managed to grab the railing of the balcony below mine. All of a sudden, a crazy man bursts out on the balcony. For a moment, I thought I was saved, but then he starts beating me. I held on somehow, but then he grabs a hammer and starts pounding on my hands. I had to let go, but I got lucky. I fell into the bushes below, winded but okay. But then a fridge fell on me, and here I am." Once again, Angel Gabriel agrees this sounds like a horrible death, and he lets Abe in. Moshe comes to the front of the line next, and again the process is repeated. Angel Gabriel explains that heaven is full, it better be a terrible story or he's not getting in. "Well, picture this," says Moshe. "There I am, minding my own business, hiding naked in a refrigerator." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Titzaveh in the book of Exodus, a ritually-oriented parsha which gives the commandment to create a ner tamid, an eternal light, for the tabernacle in the wilderness. The tabernacle was the first sanctuary of the people of Israel. Although, technically speaking, the tabernacle, the Mishkan, was a very elaborate portable tent, it was also the place where God's presence in the form of the Shekhinah resided. In a sense, that's where God lived, or more accurately, since God is everywhere, it was where God was most available to us. Last week in Truma, our ancestors were asked to create this sacred space through the voluntary gifts of their hearts. This week, we're told that there should be a continual fire, a ner tamid, a constant light shining on the altar, sign of God's faithful and permanent presence in our midst. Revealingly, that light is to be created and kindled by us, not God. We must build the altar and the fire and continue to feed and nurture it to keep it alive. And if you have ever kept a fire burning around the clock, say at a campout or bonfire or for heat on a cold winter's night in some frigid clime, you know just how much fuel you need to do it. You are always either stoking it or bringing in more wood for it to burn. Neglected for any length of time, it burns out. So the Ner Tamid was not just a symbol, but a process, requiring regular care and feeding to flourish.
our spiritual life is rather like that ancient Ner Tamid. If we wish God's presence to illuminate our lives, to give us warmth and comfort, then we too must feed our own Ner Tamid, must gently and regularly add spiritual fuel to the flame. Religious experiences, prayer, meditation, introspection, blessings, personal and communal rituals, time for breathing and meditating and allowing God into our lives, all of these help feed the fire. And they must be done with some regularity, or our own internal eternal lights will go out. The Ner Tamid, that ancient light, is found today in every synagogue in the world, no matter how humble the shul or grand the temple. While today we simply pay the electric bills to keep it alive, even that requires some active participation. But the symbolic purpose is much greater. The Ner Tamid burns always to remind us that God is with us, always. If we take the time to feed our own spiritual fires regularly. Someone who knows a great deal about that, our guest, Rabbi Harold Kushner, will tell us just how we can know if our lives really matter when we come back on Too Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114. We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Imagine this. There are serious personality clashes among Israeli politicians at the moment. Who can believe it? Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu and one of his key coalition partners, Economic and Trade Minister Naftali Bennett of the Bayit HaYehudi Party, which holds 12 critical seats in the Israeli government, are at odds. Naftali Bennett sharply criticized a trial balloon floated by Netanyahu of some Israeli settlements being transferred to Palestinian sovereignty in any ultimate agreement. Supposedly, after Bennett's response was taken personally, Netanyahu threatened to fire him from his cabinet unless he retracted. Actually, neither can afford to leave the government now, so my guess is that this will all blow over. But in general, politics is much more exciting in Israel than it is in staid old countries like America, isn't it? In France, a march through Paris against French President François Hollande ended with anti-Semitic chants and cries of support for an anti-Semitic comedian. At least 150 protesters were arrested in the Day of Anger demonstrations last week. 19 police officers were injured in clashes with protesters, one seriously. Police estimated that 17,000 people participated in the march in Paris. Protesters performed the Kinnell, a gesture reminiscent of the Hitler salute that was invented by the anti-Semitic French comedian Dudon Mbala Mbala. They also called for freedom of speech on Dudon's behalf. Anti-Semitic chants included "Jews, go home," and "Jews, France is not your country." The Union of French Jewish Students condemned anti-Semitic slogans and Nazi salutes by some protesters, and the group's president, Sasha Ringvertz, said this day of anger has turned into a day of hate. In other news, Nazi-looted paintings recovered by the Allies platoon known as the Monuments Men were sold at auction in New York last week. These lots went on the block at Sotheby's as part of a sale of old master paintings and sculpture. Some of the works had been owned by the Rothschild family. Two of the family's paintings that were auctioned were actually placed at one time in the private collection of Nazi leader Hermann Göring. During World War II, the monuments men retrieved tens of thousands of valuable masterpieces and returned them to their rightful owners. A film about the platoon, directed by George Clooney, with an all-star cast including Matt Damon, Cate Blanchett, and John Goodman, oh, and Bill Murray, is scheduled to open this week. Martin Bergman, a psychoanalyst, author, and educator who became known to a wide general audience for his unplanned, much-praised role as a philosopher in Woody Allen's 1989 film Crimes and Misdemeanors, died last week at his home in Manhattan. He was 100 years old. At his death, Bergman was still an adjunct clinical professor of psychology in the postdoctoral program in psychoanalysis and psychotherapy at NYU, where he had taught for many years. He had been scheduled to teach a seminar there next week. Bergman also maintained a private psychoanalytic practice, although in a concession to his age, he had scaled it back to just 30 hours a week at the age of 100. Not bad. Martin Shlomo Bergman was born in Prague, February 15, 1913. His father, Hugo, was a noted philosopher and an early Zionist. The family moved to Palestine, the pre-state Yeshuv, when Martin was 6 years old in 1919. As a young man in the 30s, Bergman was sent by his kibbutz to study agriculture in the U.S. He got a bachelor's and master's in agriculture from UC Berkeley. During that time, his parents divorced, he chose not to return to Palestine. Already interested in psychology, he started reading Freud while at Berkeley, served in the U.S. Army during World War II doing psychological testing of soldiers, and then moved to New York, where he received psychoanalytic training, settling into practice there as an analyst, author, and professor. A Freudian known for his erudition, he was the author of scholarly books on love, psychoanalysis, history, and religion. Bergman landed the role in Crimes and Misdemeanors entirely by chance, through a student of his who happened to know the casting director. Apparently, Woody Allen was looking for a tweedy, white-haired, European-sounding psychoanalyst to portray Professor Louis Levy, a humanistic philosopher. In the movie, a dark comedy about marriage and discontent, Allen played a filmmaker at work on a documentary about Levy, who is seen only in film clips. Martin Bergman fit the bill. Introduced to Allen, he answered his searching questions about philosophical matters like love, life, and death. 20 minutes later, Woody Allen said, "You'll do." Much of Levy's dialogue in the film was extemporized by Bergman along philosophical lines like this.
We are all faced throughout our lives with agonizing decisions, moral choices. Some are on a grand scale. Most of these choices are on lesser points. But we define ourselves by the choices we have made. We are, in fact, the sum total of our choices. Events unfold so unpredictably, so unfairly. Human happiness does not seem to have been included in the design of creation. It is only we, with our capacity to love, that give meaning to the indifferent universe. And yet, most human beings seem to have the ability to keep trying and even to find joy from simple things like their family, their work, and from the hope that future generations might understand more.
Great stuff from a man who lived a very full life and certainly a well-analyzed one. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. We are delighted to welcome back to Two Jewish our distinguished guest, Rabbi Harold Kushner, the best-selling author of many books, including When Bad Things Happen to Good People, his recent book on Job, and you started earlier this morning talking about how when you begin to write in the morning, you write a charitable contribution and send it out. And your wife clarified for you that you really do that because it helps you think about yourself as a giving person. I remember a quote from Rabbi Benzion Boxer that said, begin your day with gratitude. You weren't formed by yourself. God made you. You're not a self-made man. Is it kind of that idea as well?
Oh, I think that's a very big part of it. The gratitude plus the dimension I would add to Rabbi Boxer's very wise comment. And by the way, I think that's what praying is all about. Praying is not flattering God or nagging God with our needs, you know, Santa Claus letters. Praying is just reminding ourselves what we have to be grateful for. That's what I love about the Jewish morning service. Before you've really gotten the sleep out of your eyes, you're thanking God for the fact that you're awake, that your arms and legs work, that your eyes work. You know, when I used to teach teenage classes years ago when I was a full-time rabbi and I still had a rapport with teenagers. Now I'm two generations removed and they think of me as a Paleolithic.
Hey, I have three teenagers that live at home with me. They think of me as Paleolithic. So.
But I would say to them, I want to tell you about a Jewish prayer you might not know. And I want you to make me a promise. Listen to the prayer and promise not to laugh. And it's the prayer known in Judaism as the Asher Yatzar, praising God after you've gone to the bathroom for giving you a body that works. And it never worked. They will always giggle. But you know, as you get older especially, there is much to be grateful for, that your elimination system works, that your digestive system works, that there are foods you can eat. So there are so many routine moments during the day that a spiritually inclined person is in the habit of being grateful for, perhaps expressing it with a brief prayer. And a spiritually tone deaf person tends to be very impatient when things don't work out for him.
You've experienced both many things to feel profoundly grateful for and many painful experiences, not only in the period when bad things happen to good people. You wrote movingly about Job just a couple of years ago, a guy who really experiences everything wrong. How do we cope in difficult times with painful experiences and retain that sense of faith?
Rule one is don't try and do it yourself. Let people help you, and people will help you, whether we're talking about doctors or friends, neighbors, family. People will come and reassure you. They will give you what you need desperately. That is a sense that you're a good person. You don't deserve what's happening to you. Rule two, look deep inside yourself. You will find qualities of soul that you did not know you had. For me, that's the proof of God. I find God not in the myriad tragedies that happen to good people everywhere. I find God in the totally astonishing, unanticipated ability of people to rise to the occasion, to find within themselves, as my wife and I found within ourselves, the ability to deal with more than you ever think you can deal with. I like to put it this way. Had somebody told my wife and myself on New Year's Day 1963, before this year is out, you will have a child with the following health problems. This is what it'll mean to your marriage. This is what it'll mean to your ability to do your job. This is what it'll mean to your life. Can you handle that? I know my wife and I would have said, please don't test us. We know our limits. That's more than you can ask. We would crack under the strain. But as so often happens in life, our son came into our family without our permission being asked first. And from someplace, which I can only call God, we found within ourselves resources to love him, to comfort him, to sustain him. Resources we never believed we were capable of. And it's not only because it's me. I have dealt with innumerable congregants who have gone through the same sort of experience. Crippled, paralyzed, widowed, bankrupt, cheated. And they're ready to give up. And I say, hang in there, you're stronger than you ever believed you were, and it almost always turns out that way.
How have your thoughts changed over time? You know, you are, like all of us, not as young as you used to be. Your optimism is clear, and your positive approach to life. But what's changed the most in your thinking over the last 10 or 15 years?
A couple of things come to mind. One is more of a sense of tentativeness. I think I'm right, but I'm less prepared to insist that I'm right.
I like to say when I was 17, I knew everything, and since then I know less and less every year.
Right, or the typical young person's discovery that when I was 14, I was embarrassed by what a jerk my father was, And, you know, 10 years later, I realized how much smarter he'd become in the interview.
I hope it proves true in my family, too, sometime.
What has changed, aside from the sense of tentativeness? The most important thing is I have tweaked the notion of God that I put forward, hidden when bad things happen to good people, of a limited God, a God who can't prevent diseases but gives us the strength to cope with them. I now believe in a self-limiting God. A God who theoretically could have kept all power to himself, but that would have left human beings without the ability to do anything on their own, for good or for ill. And I would like to think, to the degree that I could put myself into God's mindset on the first week of creation, I would like to think God thought, I could create a perfect world if I wanted to. In fact, according to the rabbis in the Talmud, God once did create a perfect world, and he got bored with it, so he destroyed it. Instead, I want to create an unpredictable world. I want to create a world in which good things will happen only if people choose to make them happen. And that is something only human beings can accomplish. Animals can't be good. You realize that. Animals can be convenient. They can be messy. They can be helpful. They cannot be good because good implies choice. So I would like to think, putting words into God's mind, God created this unique creature who had the freedom of choosing how to act. And that's what makes human beings unique. And that is, this is a discussion for another day, that I think is what the story of the Garden of Eden is about. It's not about original sin. Remember, by the way, check this out. The word sin does not occur in Genesis 3. The word punishment occurs only once, and it relates to the snake, not to Adam and Eve. Remember the name of the tree. It's the tree of the knowledge of good and bad. Only human beings can understand that concept. Only human beings understand that they have to choose what they want to do. To keep the $100 bill you found on the street, or to try and find out who it belongs to. To respond to the charitable appeal to the beggar on the street, or to keep your money for yourself. To admit to the mistake you made, or to lie about it. All of those things are a matter of choice. Human beings have the ability to be good, and I'd like to think that God said when he created human beings as the unique creatures we are, I'm doing this at great risk to my creation and my world. These human beings I have turned loose have the capacity to start world wars. They have the capacity to hate. They have the capacity to commit assaults, to rob, to lie, to cheat. And they will only refrain from doing those things if they can organize themselves into the communities that will not tolerate it. They will do great good things. Doctors will stay up at all hours of the night trying to find a cure for a disease. Writers will labor to find just the right word, and composers to find just the right note. They will do marvelous things, and they will perform atrocities. You will have Einstein, you will have Gandhi, and you will have Hitler. But without that freedom, human beings would not really be human. The world would be boringly predictable. So I think I've fine-tuned my idea of God, that God could have retained total control over the world to make sure nothing bad would ever happen. But it would be a world without goodness. And goodness is too precious in the sight of God for him to create a world in which that would be lacking.
I want to thank Rabbi Harold Kushner for another marvelous visit here on Too Jewish, and certainly a representative of goodness on this earth. You can have a chance to hear him in person February 9th. Call Temple Emmanuel, 520-327-4501, and find out how you can tell if your life matters. Thanks so much, Harold.
I look forward to being with you in person soon.
Me too. When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 o'clock. Our guest will be Rabbi Aaron Pankin, the new president of Hebrew Union College Jewish Institute of Religion, the Reform Rabbinical Cantorial and Educational Seminary, spread over four campuses. By the way, our guest this morning, Rabbi Harold Kushner, will be speaking here in Tucson, where I live, on behalf of Temple Emmanuel next Sunday, February 9th. Call 520-327-4501 to get tickets to the brunch and hear him in person. Our playout this morning does not come in honor of the Super Bowl, although I hope you enjoy it today, whether you're rooting for Denver or Seattle. Our playout is a great klezmer tune called the Mazinka Zoiskegeben, a wedding tune. You sing it when you marry off your youngest child. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Huliet Kinder a ganze Nacht, die mir Sinka euch gegeben, die mir Sinka euch gegeben. Starke Freilach, du die Manke, ich der Melch. Oi, oi, ich allein hab mit meinen Augen gesehen, wie hat Gott mir Matzgach gewähnt, die mir Sinka euch gegeben, die mir Sinka euch gegeben. Schweigst du mit der Schmitzig? Häuft der Klezmer Ziergeschrei, sie spielen sich.